May my words be true to you and a blessing to your people. Amen. So, we've had an exciting start to the day, as I said, and this sermon is something of a rushed job because of that, so please bear with me and I will try and come up with something of use based on these passages. So, this has been a run of things which started on Friday for us with a scamming phone call that we got, which then led to our computer being hacked on Friday. People getting access to our bank detail. Well, they already had access to our bank details before they called us. And basically hijacking our computer and locking us out of it. So, that was an interesting start, and it's funny because when I sat down to think, okay, sermon on fear, I thought, well, that is very timely, because that kind of experience really, really affects you. You think in the Good Samaritan you had the man who fell among robbers, and that's something very physical, but it's also something when I came to relate to it that I could really get how that feels after that experience on Friday, and the stress it causes you, and the way that things keep coming back into your head. So I've not been sleeping brilliantly as well, because you just keep thinking about what's happened. And really, it kind of boils down to a betrayal of trust. And I've been thinking about this yesterday quite a bit, because I think for us to be able to function as human beings, we have to be able to trust people. We have to be able to trust the people we meet, the people that we meet officially and personally. And without a basic acknowledgement of trust between people, everything starts to collapse and fall down. Society can't function without a basic automatic trust that you give to people. And that's why people like that can do what they do, because we do tend to trust people. And that also links into our theme for this morning of fear. Because in some ways, trust is the opposite of fear. When we fear, we start to become separated from people. The links between us and other people start to break down, and we don't give them that automatic trust. And I think society as a whole is becoming more fearful at the moment. And it's almost like we are being encouraged to become more fearful and less trusting of each other at the moment. And I think that is something which is profoundly worrying. But I also think it's something which is profoundly against what Jesus shows us in these readings this morning. So James Allison, the theologian, talks about trust, and he says, when we trust someone, we can relax in their presence because they know us. So they know us, first of all, and they have our best intentions at heart. And he talks about a healthy relationship with God is one that has that kind of trust, which, and the reason, the effect of it is a relaxation in our relationship with God, that we aren't anxious in our relationship with God because we trust him. So we know he has our best interests at heart, and we know that because of that, we don't have to worry. We don't have to present our best selves all the time. We don't have to try and be something we're not. We can just relax in God's presence. And that kind of links in to some of this as well. So in the first passage, that revolves around two different relationships of trust. The first one is a betrayal of trust, obviously Judas. The other one is the great level of trust that Jesus shows in his Father. And the point there is, like James Allison is saying, when we fully trust God, when we can relax that he has our best interests at heart, because he knows us, we can go into the dark places without fear, or at least without letting fear control us, because of course Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane shows fear, but he doesn't let that fear dictate who he is going to be. He acknowledges it, but he says, but I have a greater purpose, I have a greater guide. My relationship of trust with the Father conquers that fear. As the pastoral principle says, it casts out the fear because of the greater trust that I have. And here Jesus contrasts with Peter, because Peter is unable to be in that situation of darkness without the fear controlling him. And we can see that he is being controlled by fear because of two things that he does in the reading. And in this sense, Peter is very useful for us because he kind of works as a mirror for us. We can see ourselves in Peter. We can see the things that we are prone to do in the way that Peter reacts. And so we can see his fear, firstly, in his attack. He is afraid in the garden, and he responds to that by an attack. He cuts off the ear of Malchus. And I always think in that scene, it's interesting, that I think there's a little other message there, that when we attack people, they can't hear us. It's like, if we go on the attack with our sword, off goes the ear. They can no longer listen to what we're saying. But anyway, so Peter, he feels fear and he responds in a very human way. He attacks. And then we also see later, Peter's fear drives him to denial. He denies Jesus. And that is a really key point to balance with the trust. Because what I'm going to kind of pull out is that I think trust connects us to people. When we trust people, like I said, we need trust for society because it creates these bonds of connection which mean that we can function. But the opposite of trust with fear, fear separates us, it atomizes us, i.e. it just kind of cuts us into our own little individual bubble because we don't have the trust to reach beyond ourselves anymore. And what you see with Peter is, because he is afraid for himself, he splits himself off from the others, from the disciples, from Jesus, from everybody who has been important to him, and he becomes atomized. He's just a single person. In the second reading, so from the first reading, what I'm suggesting is that one opposite of fear is trust, and that God calls us to trust in him and not let ourselves be split off from each other, not let ourselves be atomized into little individual units, rather than being fully connected to other people. And the second reading shows that fear doesn't just fragment ourselves from other people, it also fragments us within ourselves. And as somebody who had that hacking on Friday, I can absolutely testify that it kind of splits you into little bits even within yourself. You get stuck in your mind, or your mind shuts down and you get stuck in your body. And it stops you working as a kind of holistic, happy whole. And Jesus points to this in his answer to the question about eternal life, because he says, love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your strength and all your mind. He's giving us an image of somebody who isn't fragmented, who isn't split just into their mind and being preoccupied with thinking, or not thinking at all and just looking after their physical selves. He's showing us an integrated whole life in relationship to God, and obviously also in relationship to our neighbour. So while we talked about trust as the opposite of fear, this shows us something else which is opposite to fear, which is mercy, and the mercy which this parable of the Good Samaritan revolves around. And like with Peter, driven by fear of being dragged into the suffering of the others, in this parable, the first two people, the priest and the Levite, allow themselves to be atomized by fear. So maybe they thought, here's somebody who's been robbed. The robbers are probably still lurking. It's a very deserted, barren place. If I stop, they'll come out and get me. And they allowed their fear to control them rather than the mercy that the Good Samaritan showed. They think of their own safety first. Soon after I came to faith, in the first couple of years of being a Christian, when I was praying, I would often see images. And they kind of taught me about Christianity really often. And one of the images that I saw in that period when I was praying was I saw this light, a kind of heart-shaped light that was just giving off this loveliness. And coming out of this heart, there were all of these things that looked almost like umbilical cords in a circle. So if you imagine a heart of light and then lots and lots of cords coming off all the way around, like spokes on a wheel. And at the end of each one of these cords was a person. It looked like a little kind of gingerbread man cut out shape. So, and what I realised was that the heart was God, and we all have a connection which God says he knew us in our womb. There's a connection there that never broke, and it never breaks for any of us. Not the most kind of person who you think they're really lost, they've strayed. That connection cannot break for any of us. We can stop taking notice of it, but it's there. And not only were the spokes of the wheels connecting us to God, all the way round, like the edge of a wheel, all of the people were also connected to each other. And what I realised looking at this passage is that that image is the image of what Jesus is talking about here. Love God with your whole self and love your neighbour. And when you do that, and when you don't fear, and when you don't fear, maybe I'm not good enough for God, maybe he doesn't really like me, maybe my neighbour's out to get me, when you refuse to have that kind of questioning, and you live from the place that that image gives us, that is what Jesus is calling us to, I think, in this parable. And what you see in the parable is that the first two have forgotten that we are all connected. We're all connected to God, so we needn't fear, and we are all connected to each other. But the Good Samaritan, like Jesus, is able to go into the dark place. And this comes back to my current preoccupation. I've just preached on it twice in the last two sermons, so I won't labour the point. But I'm thinking a lot at the moment about how so much of faith comes back to how we see other people, how we choose our seeing and what we look for and what we don't see and what we do see. In this case, because the Good Samaritan saw with pity, and it says he was moved with pity, and Patrick reminded me this morning that that verb in the Greek comes from the base verb of splagismai, which means moved in your entrails. So that kind of whole body being moved. So again, it's coming back to when we are connected as a whole, body, soul, mind, all of it connected in relationship with God. So the Good Samaritan sees the person who's been attacked and is moved in his very core of his being to feel pity. And because he feels pity and allows himself to be moved, he shows mercy, because the pity overrides the fear. And that is what keeps the connection to the other person open, rather than allowing fear to atomize him, to cut him off into his own little world of his own protection and interest. And so this passage asks us, will we be run by fear and shut ourselves off and just be detached? Or will we keep that connection that was there when we were in our womb, our connection with God and with each other, open? Which means that we look on all people without exception with mercy and as connected to ourselves. And we are learning that this altruistic way of living is something which helps us too. First example I'm going to give of that, from anybody who knows The Hobbit, if you don't, just bear with me, I won't go too long. In The Hobbit, at one point, Gandalf says, the reason Bilbo, who has had a magic ring, which gives you great power, but also destroys you and corrupts your soul, the reason Bilbo took so little harm from having the ring that he carried for so long, is that he started his journey with it with pity. He saw this creature that he took the ring from, and he looked on him not with fear, but he empathised with him. He felt that connection, he felt pity. And that is why he was protected from the harm that the ring could do him. And on a more serious note, I remember reading when somebody was talking about their experience of being in a concentration camp in World War II. And they said the people responded to that situation differently. Some people were driven by fear, and they would fight and claw for every little scrap they could get, and if they got food or if they got clothing or anything else, they would keep it to themselves, a bit like Gollum, and they would protect it and guard it and look out for themselves, because fear had split them off from the common humanity with everybody else. And he said those weren't the ones who survived. They weren't the people who got out of the camp at the end. The people who survived tended to be the ones who did look at other people and feel that connection, who shared what they had, who encouraged each other, who tried to look out for their neighbour, like Jesus tells us. Those were the ones who tended to get out at the end. And that's a very countercultural message. Society tells us, survival of the fittest, fight for yourself, look after number one. But the evidence just doesn't bear it out. And even the science of survival of the fittest is now being questioned, and a sense of survival, of altruism, is being brought in. So from the two readings, what do we take? Fear, it destroys trust and it atomizes us. But fear can be trumped by pity and mercy, which connects us to other people. Fear limits our actions, but pity, mercy and trust free us to act, free us to show mercy, free us to be connected and live the full life which Jesus offers us, fully connected within ourselves, heart, mind, body, soul, and fully connected with our brothers and sisters. And at this point, I think, Louisa, do you have the questions we're going to be thinking about? Aha. So these are the questions that we're going to be coming back to at the how can we encourage one another to wrestle prayerfully with becoming a church that exhorts everyone to examine their worthiness in a meaningful and habitual way? So that comes back to, I think, the James Allison point about trusting that God made us and God looked at us and he said we were good. And yes, things go wrong. Yes, we do bad things. We do things we shouldn't. But at the core of all of this, there is the connection to God which drives us, which he planted in our mother's womb, and which can feed and nourish and guide us if we listen to it. And then thinking about discipleship as a personal response to Christ driven by conviction and conscience. Discipleship is a member of the church with its historically received and understood traditions. And avoiding a cheap grace that denies the costliness of Christ's call to his disciples to take up their cross and follow him. And we see that in the parable, the Good Shepherd. You know, Peter at the last didn't follow Jesus when he was called to. And he repented of that. And of course, Jesus, you know, took him back. And the Good Samaritan did follow Jesus. He took himself into that dark place. He shouldered his cross and said, this is what I am called to do, because this is my brother. And also discerning whether it is legitimate for church leaders to seek to exclude people from sharing in leadership and rejecting pastoral practice that is coercive or abusive. So those are the questions that have been given us by our church leaders to think about fear. You've got quite a mixed bag there to reflect on as we come back to the question time. So let us finish with a prayer. Lord, help us to trust in you, even in dark places, that our trust may cast out fear, and help us to be people who look on everyone we meet with mercy. And so we are guided by mercy, not fear, and so are connected as you meant us to be, not split apart. Amen.